It's Mark Yeagy here, wealth architect and lifestyle investor. Let's take your life to the next level. Welcome to the Wealth Architect Podcast. Hey, everybody. Welcome to another edition of the Wealth Architect Podcast. I'm your host, Mark Yeagy. Thanks for being here again. We got some really cool guests lined up. I was just doing a chat with them in advance, and they've got some interesting stuff that I hope we're going to get to about real estate. And you guys know that when we talk about real estate, most people look at real estate as an investment, as a passive income investment. So we're going to kind of go into that. And I have a feeling we're going to go into some tax strategies and some things that really make real estate exciting. Let me just introduce quickly our guests. Amanda Hahn and Matt McFarland are CPAs and tax strategists who specialize in helping people use real estate to save massive amount in taxes. And we all want to save massive amount in taxes, right? We don't want to pay a dime more than we have to. Amanda's a third generation real estate investor and grew up around investing. And Matt is a certified specialist in plan giving, tax planning at a big four accounting firm. And they decided to, together to take some of the tax strategies traditionally used by the ultra wealthy to benefit everyday real estate investors. And they help educate investors on how to maximize tax write-offs, legal entity strategies, which we've talked about before, tax efficient ways to access profit, and how to use that 401k money for real estate and much more. Please get ready to welcome Amanda Hahn and Matt McFarland. Welcome. How are you?
We're good. Thanks, Mark. Appreciate you having us.
Yeah, excited to be here.
Yeah, it's a pleasure to have you on. And you know, I come so much from the stock market world, and I have some experience. My dad was a real estate investor primarily, and I have been a real estate investor, but I just don't love it. So I always love it when I get people on here that are passionate about real estate. So tell us a little bit about what you do, how you got started, and where we are today. And then we'll get to how everybody on the call could benefit.
You know, like you said, for me, I'm the third generation of real estate investors. And I think I sort of started out similar to you, growing up around real estate, and my grandparents were very hands-on landlords. So I saw a lot of the the not so pleasant dirty work that had to be done. So growing up, I never thought I would do real estate. Went to school, got a job. I happened to end up in one of the big fours in the real estate specialty group. So I worked mainly with real estate investors and came to the realization that real estate is one of the few ways to, you know, be able to build wealth and save on taxes. So here we are.
Yeah. And I, you know, to be honest, I also worked at the big four, and early on in my kind of CPA tax career, my aha moment was I was doing a tax return. I was probably, 23, 24 years old, working on a tax return for some retired individual. He was probably in his 60s, and looking at his tax return, he was, when you add back the depreciation expense, it was clear that he was making well over six figures in passive income. And that was kind of where the light bulb went off, that he was making this passive income and cash flow, but not paying any taxes on it because of depreciation and some other things. And so that was kind of, like I said, that was kind of my aha moment. And in our practice now with Keystone CPA, you know, we probably 80 to 90% of our clients are real estate investors to some extent. So, it runs the gamut of people that are working the W-2 job and investing passively on the side, to people that are retired and just invest passively on the side, to people who are doing real estate full time. You know, it just kind of runs the whole gamut. And so it's just kind of what we like, and it's what we've kind of tailored, I guess, our practice to over the years.
Well, that's great. I mean, it's so interesting that you've kind of specialized in real estate investing. You know, most CPAs don't drill down to that kind of level of specificity, but it is a fascinating thing, because a lot of people who don't understand real estate say, wait a minute, you're making all this money, but you pay no taxes. You're one of those rich people, right? You're one of that 1%. But, you know, let's look at why that's the case, right? Let's analyze why is it the case that people that invest in real estate don't have to pay those taxes?
Well, you know, when it comes to the tax world, you always hear people talk about there's huge tax benefits to being a business owner, right? Business owners and entrepreneurs. And I know a lot of our audience are already business owners. So we understand that as business owners, you have access to an endless amount of tax write-offs. Not only are you writing off expenses for your business or real estate, but you're also able to shift some of what are traditionally personal expenses into legitimate business deductions. For example, you might be using your your vehicle for your real estate business, as well as your personal, and you know, you have home office and some travel and meals and things like that. So that's over the course of a year, a lot of these deductions add up. But one of the biggest benefits of being a real estate investor is the ability to take depreciation on the property itself.
Yeah, and that could apply whether you are owning the property directly yourself, or probably to a lot of your audience, right? They're investing passively in somebody else's deal that's generating cash flow, but they're doing depreciation or some sort of accelerated depreciation, cost segregation, whatever it is, inside that syndication, that partnership, whatever you want, that's using that expense to offset their taxable income. So that's kind of, we'll see that a lot for a ton of our clients as well.
Well, I want to go into that in a second, but first of all, can you all define, because not everybody listening to this podcast is a 7 and 8 figure investor. Most are, but a lot of people want to be there. And you know what you're talking about is one of the strategies to get there. So let's at least define what depreciation is and why it's a benefit. And then I want to ask you another question.
Yeah, depreciation. So basically the IRS allows us to take depreciation write-off for the building. So the way they look at it, regardless of whether the value of a property increases or decreases, they're saying there's a wear and tear that occurs when you invest in a building. And so what they do is they say, okay, well, based on the wear and tear, let's say we're talking about residential real estate investments, you can write off the purchase price of that building over 27 and a half years. So that's kind of just taking the slow and steady approach. So if you bought this building for $100,000, you write it off over 27 and a half years. So every year you're getting a little bit of a deduction to offset the rental income or passive income that you're generating.
So if you sell, if you buy a $2.7 million property, you're essentially going to be able to take $100,000 off of your income as a deduction in your taxes. So if you made $100,000, you take $100,000 in a deduction and you have therefore no taxes. Right.
Exactly.
Is that fair? Is that fair to the people that don't get depreciation?
Everybody gets depreciation, right? As long as you are doing the right thing, you're investing in real estate, you're investing in your business. There's nobody who doesn't get depreciation. It's actually required by law. So if you have certain assets, you're required to take depreciation.
Well, it's kind of what we call like a paper write-off, a paper expense, right? Because you know that building, that $2.7 billion building, you might have paid $2.7 million in cash for it, or you could have paid $500,000 in a down payment and used a loan to get the rest, right? And so it's not $2.7 necessarily that you're out of pocket paying and writing off over time. But that's why we like it, you know, in terms of from a tax perspective, investing in real estate, kind of unlike, you know, nothing wrong with investing in the stock market, right? But when you buy a stock, you're not writing off the cost of the stock when you buy it. You don't get to actually write it off until you sell the stock down the road. So that's kind of one of the main differences, right? That why we like real estate from a tax planning perspective.
Definitely a huge advantage. That real estate has its disadvantages as well. It's not as quick as the stock market. I can get in and out of the stock. I can spend $2.7 million in the click of a mouse, and I can't do that in real estate, which is probably a good thing in my case. But let me ask you the follow-on question about that, because I'm actually curious about this, and I know that you structure entities in addition to figuring out tax strategies. So let me ask you a question. By the way, everybody, this is not tax advice, financial advice. This is just three people having fun talking about investing in tax stuff, right? So nothing that we say, believe nothing that we say, go verify it with the people that you need to verify it for. And if you end up doing something based on what we say, awesome. But if you lose money, we didn't say it.
Not my problem.
That's not our problem. Yeah.
That rolled off your tongue too easily.
But let me just bring this up. So you triggered something in my mind. Let's say that we set up a company and we find this $2.7 million office building. And I own 45% of the company and I want to sell off 55% of the company. And we'll call that a syndication where we go and get some investors and we put together an investment to buy this thing for $2.7 million. And let's just say we don't finance it. Let's say the investors are financing the whole thing and that's why they get the 55%. Can I segregate the depreciation, all the depreciation over on my 45% as the managing partner, and just give the passive income to the 55% of the people that make the investment into the project?
There might be ways to do that in a general sense. A lot of times when you see syndicate, at least when we see syndications, the investors are also sharing in the depreciation just because it helps them to offset the expected cash flow. And so they're not, you know, that's always a question. Someone's like, I got $10,000 in distributions this year, $100,000 in distributions from the syndication. So I'm going to pay tax on that, right? Well, not necessarily, right? It's going to depend on what the K-1 shows. It's going to depend on what expenses are being taken inside the partnership. Because cash distribution is not the same as taxable income. And so a lot of times you'll see that the depreciation is being shared with the investors for, you know, primarily that reason.
Yeah, and I also think too for passive, because we also, so we have clients who are the syndicators putting the deals together. We also have a lot of clients who are the passive investors. And I think, you know, from the passive investors' perspective, they definitely want or expect to have some tax benefit, right? So usually they won't be happy if the sponsor is being allocated all the tax benefit and they're just stuck with paying taxes on the whole thing.
And unless you structure it in a way such that the passive investors get an outlandish portion of the investment and the other people get the phantom income. I guess from what I was understood in an LLC, you can structure it any way you want because it's really—
There's a lot of ways to do it, and there are a lot of hurdles and things to watch out for, obviously.
All right, so I'm going to throw one out of left field for you. What is like one of the coolest real estate investing strategies, tax strategies? You can go anywhere you want with this, but what is one of the coolest things that you know of that you've been able to do for your customers, or maybe that you know of that you'd like to try? We'll be right back. Hey, it's Mark Yeager here to tell you about our Cash Flow Machine trading program that's designed to teach you how to make safe, reliable income. Now, we shoot for 2 to 4% a month of income and growth in your portfolio. And we have courses to teach you how to do this yourself or inside a mastermind community. And the best part of that is it only takes about 20 minutes a week to implement. Now, while 2 to 4% a month doesn't sound like much, I show you exactly how we took my IRA from $111,000 to over $500,000 in just 19 months without huge risk. I'm not telling you this to brag, just to show you that you could do this too. So to learn more about this program, go to cashflowmachine.io. That's cashflowmachine.io, and you can learn more.
Gosh, there's so many. One that kind of pops into my mind is using retirement money for real estate. I know this is a highly debated topic area in terms of whether it's good to do, to have, you know, IRA 401k money or pension money in real estate versus the stock market. But one example, we had a client who used their Roth IRA money, right? That's going to be permanently tax-free, bought a piece of land in an area where he knew a hospital was going to be built. And that asset went from, he bought the land for like $100,000 and in a couple of years, it was close to $800,000. And what's so great about that is he never has to pay taxes on that transaction. So I think, you know, being strategic when you have a good deal to figure out what's the best source of funding for that investment, sure, right? Whether it's my cash or taking equity out of my other assets, pledging my stocks to get a loan or a retirement account, could really help to, you know, create the best ROI.
I love that. So a lot of people don't realize that you can put real estate into your IRA or your SEP IRA, your Roth IRA, and you can, right? It's a self-directed format. You can invest in a lot of things that way. Interesting to go back to the question that I brought up. You've got somebody in an IRA that doesn't have to pay taxes, right? They've already paid the taxes on the money and they invest in that syndicate we just hypothetically talked about. They don't need the passive, they don't need the depreciation, right? So this might be a partner that you give up the depreciation in order to get a little bit more income into the Roth IRA, right?
Yeah, possibly you can do that definitely with special allocations like what you were talking about earlier. I think, you know, as a sponsor, when in our audience who are sponsors, you do have to be careful. There's a little known, lesser known tax pitfall when it comes to retirement investing called unrelated debt financing tax. So basically that's where the IRS says, hey, you can have your, you know, if you had $100,000 in your IRA, you can certainly buy a $100,000 property, no problem. But what if you had a $100,000 IRA, you invested in a fund or a syndication that uses leverage, where now you have a $500,000 property? Well, $100,000 worth is still growing tax deferred or tax free, but you may have to pay taxes on the leveraged portion because that's not technically IRA money. So it's a lesser known pitfall, but these are some of the reasons why you just want to be careful before you start taking away tax benefits from some of these IRA investors. They might come back a little bit angry later.
As you mentioned or paraphrased earlier, right, before you run to the back of the room and do it yourself, right?
Yeah, talk with your CPA.
So, I mean, this is a message that I like to get out, because part of being wealthy, part of growing wealth, part of setting yourself up financially is to build a team around you. And, you know, I always tell people that you've got to probably go through 10 CPAs before you find one that's really good. And so when I find one that's really good, they're usually worth their weight in gold, because they don't just think in the box, they think a little bit out of the box. Now, too much out of the box is crazy, but too much in the box means you're paying too much in taxes. So you've got to find that balance for yourself. So everybody who's listening and watching, you've got to find people like these two great people who have nuances that can tell you about these little debt things that you probably didn't know about by doing it yourself. So you've got to put people like this on your team, because if you do, you know, what do you pay per hour for somebody to save you hundreds, thousands, or even millions of dollars over time? And they have strategies and experience. Amanda, you said you're third generation real estate investment. That means you've got some experience. You've seen your parents with the plunger at 2 o'clock in the morning. But now you also have the experience of what it's like to be on the other side, doing people's taxes and structuring things properly so that they can do really well over time. Does that make sense?
Yeah. And I think a lot of people, when you talk about real estate, that's what the vision that comes to mind is the 2 a.m. toilet clogging sort of calls. But I know, like with our own investments and a lot of our clients who are just business owners, you know, maybe busy attorneys or physicians, and they are still able to build wealth passively through real estate, whether it's through turnkey properties, having good property management companies, or in larger syndication deals where they get the benefit of the cash flow appreciation and tax savings without the 2 a.m. phone calls and without being, you know, type, quote unquote, a landlord, right?
Right.
In market, whether it's real estate or any investment, right? And what we like to tell clients is just open that line of communication with your team and with your CPA and have that conversation throughout the year. Don't wait until April and, you know, say, okay, here's my tax stuff and what can I do for last year to save tax? That's a lot harder at that point in time, right? And there might be a few things you can do, but, you know, whether it's real estate or stock markets or syndication, whatever the investment is, it's just having a conversation ahead of time that, hey, I think I'm thinking about doing this. What do I need to watch out for? Or what should I plan ahead for? And, you know, you don't need to be a CPA yourself, but just be able to ask those right questions, right? Just to open the line of communication.
Well, I have a saying on this podcast, and if you've listened or watched the podcast before, you know that I say, never give up your power and your health, your wealth, or your time. And that means you don't just go to the CPA and say, here, figure it out. You're an active part of the team, right? You're not somebody up in the booth that just kind of looks at things, you know, on the April 15th. You're actively looking at what you do. And most people don't know it and don't take the time to do it. And they give up their power. And if they don't have the right team member, the team member might be, you know, coming up short on giving them the right strategies. So let me shift to another concept. I'm just going to ask the question. What can you do or have you done with conservation easements?
Conservation easement is one of the many, you know, strategies we look at in terms of working with clients on tax planning. You know, it depends on the profile of the client. Typically, it's going to be people with, you know, probably the highest tax brackets for federal and state purposes. The benefit of conservation easement typically is that you, if the numbers work out right, you're saving more in taxes than the investment that you've made. You know, similar to what you're saying about the stock market, you can do that with the click of a mouse, right? It's not something that you have to do a lot of active participation in, which is why it's one of the loopholes when it comes to taxes. Some of the downsides is, you know, obviously it's one of those more advanced strategies that the IRS loves to dig into. So when we talk about conservation easement as a strategy, it always goes to what is the risk tolerance of that specific client, and do the numbers work out for them?
Yeah, and I think, you know, it is one of those things that I, the IRS is paying a little more closer scrutiny to. I think in recent years they've kind of put a cap on or limited, you know, the, you know,
well, they're trying to
limit the multiplier, you know, how much you can, how much of a deduction you can get compared to your investment. So, you know, but yeah, it's the way, Amanda described it. It sounds crazy, right? Is you're saving more in taxes than the money you put in, but
it's like you're buying a tax.
We see it, right? It's just a matter of, you know, getting with the right group.
Yeah. Let me explain real quick.
Because too aggressive, right? You know?
Yeah. Let me just explain to the listeners and viewers real quick what it is. A tax conservation easement is something that a lot of people that you know about are doing. Donald Trump, for example, bought a golf course and he basically gave the rights to the golf course to preserve in perpetuity forever part of the golf course. Instead of developing it for houses, he developed it and just left it as a golf course, which means it's going to be green forever. So no development can happen on that. Well, you're allowed to take the deduction on the difference between what it would have been worth as a development for houses versus what it's worth as a conservation easement preserved for perpetuity of all time. And if you overextend, like our guests are saying today, if you overextend the amount that you take versus what it's really worth. In other words, if you have a really high appraisal of what it would have been worth, the IRS is going to kind of go like this. They're going to look a little bit questioning at your values and they might disallow it. So Amanda's exactly right. You've got to make sure that you've got a little bit of a risk tolerance, but you also have to be in the right conservation easement, because if you've got somebody that's really swinging for the fences, they might, you know, get you in trouble. But if you have a legitimate one, it's actually a legitimate, you know, tax strategy and a legitimate thing that the IRS has set up, and they've been in place for 30 or 40, 50 years now. But the most famous ones are the ones at Mar-a-Lago and the Donald Trump ones. And there's a lot of other ones that people do because they're a tax write-off to be able to preserve property green forever. It's interesting.
Yeah, it's good late night reading material for sure.
I just didn't want everybody to be going, what are they talking about? All right, we can shift topics. So listen, you guys have written a book together, right?
Yeah, two books.
So two books together. All right. So that's one each or two together. So tell me about
that's one and three quarters and 20 and, you know, 25% over here.
Okay. Tell us about those books.
So our first book is called Tax Strategies for the Savvy Real Estate Investor. It is published by Bigger Pockets. And the story behind the book was actually Matt and I were on a cruise. And back in the day,
we are married to each other. So before people are like, hey, business partners go on cruises together. So
we do go on cruises with our team at work. Cool. So it was back in the days. I don't know if you recall, but like, internet was very expensive when you're on a ship. It was like $7 a minute or something, right? So you're not on your phone. Then there's nothing else to do. We brought a couple tax books to read because that's what CPAs do on a cruise. You bring some tax books, you know, get brushed up. And what I realized sitting on the ship reading this book is like, man, these tax books are so boring. They're like textbooks. And I wondered how real estate investors, the average person, would get any benefit out of reading these kind of like textbooks. And so I thought, well, we should really do a book based on something that's understandable for someone who's not in taxes, filled with stories of what could go right when you do tax planning correctly, and also what goes wrong, you know, if you're not doing the right things. And so that's how our book was, that's how it was birthed. Like, let's think about client stories that was, you know, interesting or had lessons. Whoa. And put together a book based on that.
Are you telling me that if I pull your book off the shelf, I order your book, that I'm not going to be bored? Is that what you're telling me?
That's what people told us. So.
That's the challenge.
Okay. No, it is a lot of it's a lot of client stories, and we obviously, you know, we changed the names to protect the innocent or the guilty, however you want to look at it. But it's a lot of stories about what's you know, at the same time, what's worked well, what hasn't worked well, and, you know, from a teaching perspective of, you know, here's how you can do it, and, you know, kind of things to watch out for. But we try and, you know, yeah, pick funner stories that, you know, a little enlightening and keep people entertained.
Good. I love it. In fact, I'm probably going to read it because I read stuff like that. So, you know, I want to find out what you guys are thinking on the other side. That's great. All right. Listen, where do people, well, first of all, is there something that I haven't asked you that I should have asked you today?
Gosh. I mean, you know, we can talk about taxes for hours or days. So you'll be opening up a whole big can of worms. I think the one thing I will say I think the most common mistake that we see, not just for real estate investors, but business owners or just, you know, regular taxpayers, I think the most common mistake is people mistakenly think that tax return filing is how you save on taxes. We mentioned a little bit earlier, the only true way to save on taxes legitimately is with proactive tax planning. And that's meeting with your tax person during the year or just keeping them updated. You know, here's what I'm doing for my business. I'm expanding, I'm selling. Same thing with my real estate. Before you make those transactions or make those decisions, just a brief conversation with your tax advisor will help to provide you with different options. And some of those options could mean the difference between losing half of it to taxes versus paying nothing in taxes. So I encourage everyone to understand that tax planning and tax return filing are completely different things. You really need to dedicate some time to tax planning.
I love it. I love it. I spent a lot of time last year dedicated to tax planning, and I can tell you, it is definitely not my favorite thing to do, but I know how important it is to do. So listen, where do people find out a bit more about you, get your book, you know, get in contact with you, that kind of stuff?
Our book you can find on Amazon. It's called Tax Strategies for the Savvy Real Estate Investor. If you're someone more advanced, we have the second book, which is the advanced book on tax strategy. So CPAs are not super creative with names, right? It's the first book or the advanced book. I think KeystoneCPA.com is the best place to find additional information about tax saving strategies. We have a lot of free downloadable resources you can check out there. If you want to just get daily tidbits of tax tips, you can follow us on social media. Mostly going to be me, Amanda Hahn, CPA on Instagram is where I typically can be found.
She'll put me on there every once in a while, but yeah.
He's all my backup dancer.
Oh, you guys, that's TikTok, isn't it?
You're right.
Yeah, maybe.
We'll get there one day.
If you say so.
It's funny. All right. So Amanda Hahn CPA is the Instagram handle. KeystoneCPA.com. I'll have all this stuff in the show notes on the wealtharchitectpodcast.com. But anything you'd like to leave our viewers with? I love the last tip, which was, you know, it's not the tax return, stupid. It's, you know, it's more than the tax return. It's the tax return. And it's all the preparation in order to get the tax return right. What other tidbit can you leave us with? And then we'll say goodbye.
No, I just love what you mentioned earlier, how, you know, making sure that you're, you know, actively part of your team, right? Where you're not just kind of, you know, handing it off and expecting someone else to do it, you know, be able to, you know, have that intelligent conversation. And again, you don't need to be a CPA. You don't need to be a doctor. You don't need to be a lawyer, but you need to be able to kind of be a part of that conversation, be a part of the planning process for sure.
Yeah, I love it. Well, listen, I've learned a few things here, and I hope the listeners and viewers have learned a few things. So thank you so much for your time, your wisdom, and dedication to our listeners and your clients. I really appreciate it. And everybody else who's listening and viewing, thanks for being here on another edition of the Wealth Architect Podcast. Remember, until next time, don't give up your power and your health, your wealth, or your time. Have a great day, everybody. See you next time.
You've been listening to the Wealth Architect Podcast with Mark Yeagy. Follow us on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Like and subscribe on YouTube. Share and tell your friends. See you soon.